Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Denise Michaud of the Club's Grownups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished panelists for our program, How to Age in Place Safely. Catherine Reed is a licensed clinical social worker and director of client services at Reliable Caregivers, located in San Francisco and serving the Bay Area. Catherine has 15 years' experience in the field of geriatric care in both long-term care facilities and home care. Tara Donahue is a broker with Zephyr Real Estate. She has 19 years' experience in San Francisco real estate. Tara has a senior real estate specialization designation and has helped over 100 seniors sell their homes. And Denise Michaud is an insurance broker with 25 years' experience in long-term care insurance. She has been a longstanding member of the Agent Advisory Group for the California Partnership Program for Long-Term Care. And now we'll start our program. Hi, everyone. In 1998, my mother decided to buy long-term care insurance, but my father said no. He didn't want to spend the money. However, she did finally override him. 12 years later, she needed long-term care. And so she hired caregivers to come in and help her bathe and dress and get around. They also did some cooking and cleaning and sometimes took her to the doctor. She wanted to have this plan in place because, after all, we had taken care of our grandmother for many, many, many years, and it was hard and difficult for the family. So she wanted something to be different for her. And what happened is that everything went according to her plan. She stayed in control of the situation. She didn't rely on us kids to provide the daily care. And she was able to save or keep the savings and investments intact. So most people that I meet with also have a personal experience, and they also had difficulty and a hard time with it. And so they also want things to be different for themselves. So when you're planning, the first step is to really think about what most concerns you. So if you need long-term care, what is the impact going to be on your retirement? What's the impact going to be on your family? And what living arrangements do you want to have? For my mother and for most people, they want to stay at home. And her planning ahead allowed her to stay at home for as long as she needed care. Once you have your objections or objectives and what you want to accomplish, you know, in mind, then the next thing is to have create a solution for yourself. And you want to have a deliberate solution so when you need care, things go smoothly. And so we look at our resources and what our options are. So there are five resources that we tend to look at. The first one is your family. Do you have family available that can provide some of the care? And how many hours a day, you want to be realistic about it, how many hours a day could they provide care? The second thing is your own savings and investments. And most people, again, want to stay at home, so they have to have their living expenses covered. So we're looking at just discretionary money. What discretionary money is available to provide or to pay for your care? And the third thing would be long-term care insurance. If you're eligible and can get long-term care insurance, that can be an option as well. If you don't have a lot of money or have modest assets, then possibly an option would be Medi-Cal, which is a state welfare program. So Medi-Cal will pay for your care in a nursing facility if you have limited income and assets, and they do provide some limited support at home. And then the fifth resource that could be available is moving into a retirement community that provides lifetime care. And of course, that would be a combination of your assets and the retirement community providing care. So for most people that I see, it is going to be a combination of two or three of these resources. And again, for most people that I meet and work with, it's going to be a combination of some family support, and usually not having the family provide day-to-day care, but maybe just overseeing the care, and using some of the resources so that they have, the assets and the income or savings that they have. And generally, people allocate 20 to 50% of their own money to go towards their care. And then the third thing is long-term care insurance can pay and supplement the difference. If long-term care is part of the solution, then know that the policies have changed over time. They've really improved over the years, and they pay what people need for care. So they cover home care, assisted living facility, nursing home care, adult daycare center, and hospice care. And you're also able to use the benefits to hire licensed people like nurses, social workers, nutritionists, speech therapists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, as well as a personal caregiver to come in, like my mother did, to help you with your activities like getting up and dressing and bathing, getting ready for the day, and doing other things around the house that you're not able to do because you're not well. And some policies also allow you to use the benefits to make modifications to your home so that you are able to stay home, like widening doors or putting ramps in. A couple of companies also let you use the benefits to pay for some family member help. So not all the benefits can be used for family support, but some benefits can. There's a range of coverage that you can purchase if it's suitable for you. And generally, people can buy a small policy, so like a modest policy to help out, a medium-sized policy or a moderate policy, and or even a substantial policy. My mother ended up buying a substantial policy, which means that she really didn't have to pay anything out of pocket. Everything was covered by the insurance plan. So that doesn't happen all the time, but we were lucky for that. And one of her goals was not to use the savings and investments so it would be available for my dad. There's two types of premium payments. One type is you pay on an ongoing basis, and then when you need care, you don't have to pay the premium anymore. And then another one is you pay a single premium, one-time premium, or over 10 years. And in some plans, if you don't need care and just die or don't need a lot of care, then your money comes back to your estate or your beneficiary. And sometimes some plans also have a death benefit that will come back. So the money comes back to the beneficiary or estate tax-free. So when people need care and use their policy, I always encourage people to use their policy soon, not hold on to it. In my mother's case, she did not want to think she needed long-term care, even though she did. It took almost a year to convince her to use her policy. And that's pretty common with people. So I would encourage people to use their policy soon, have it activated. And two kind of tips in this would be you want to make sure that your doctor understands what's going on with you at home. The doctor doesn't know what's going on at home with you unless you tell him. So you want to keep the doctor informed about what you need. We did have somebody who had Alzheimer's, and the doctor said to the family, should get tested, neurological test, and the family said, well, why? We know. So pretty clear that he had Alzheimer's and so didn't want to spend the money for the test. When they filed for the claim, there is no documentation with the doctor, very little documentation with the doctor. So we need some supporting documentation. We're able to go back and recreate it, but it was, you know, that takes time. The other type of person that you want to have involved is maybe a family member or your power of attorney who can help you with the process when you need care. Because if you need care and you're not feeling well, you're probably not going to immediately pick up the phone, talk to your agent, or call the insurance company. And you need somebody else with you, by your side, to start that process and get it going. The key person, I think, for long-term care, so I've been doing this for 25 years, the key person in long-term care is the care manager, to me. And that, for example, is Catherine. The care manager is a geriatric nurse or social worker who understands aging issues. They understand what goes on in the home and can they come to your home, they assess your needs, and also help recommend what supportive services you need, and they can also find suitable caregivers for you as well. The insurance companies, almost all the insurance plans now, provide and pay for a care manager to come over. And so the care manager is really your professional advocate and helps you guide your way towards the right kind of care. The insurance company will pay for the services, but you need that independent guidance as well. So with that, I'll turn that over to Catherine now.
Thank you, Denise. I'm Catherine. As you know, I'm here to discuss home care. Geriatric care management is just one of the items I'll discuss tonight. But first, I just wanted to highlight the differences between using an agency, also known as a home care organization. That's another term that you might hear, and you'll hear tonight me speaking about that. Hiring privately and or hiring through what's known as a DRA or a domestic referral agency. So private hire is literally that. You are hiring somebody privately to care for yourself or a loved one. You are the employer. You would be considered the employer in that circumstance. You're responsible for all aspects of that caregiver in terms of their employment with you, taxes, filing W-2s, workers' compensation, all of those financial pieces of being an employer. So that's really something to be aware of as you're looking at options for either yourself or a loved one. The other thing to keep in mind in regards to hiring privately is that you are responsible then for the schedule. Yes, it gives you flexibility, and yes, you're hiring somebody one-on-one for you. But if that caregiver is sick, or they have an emergency, or they simply want a vacation, that is another aspect of hiring privately that can be a problem for some people. So it is just something to be aware of. A domestic referral agency, also known as a DRA, you'll hear that term a lot, basically is a business that refers domestic help to private homes, okay? The workers they refer are not their employees, but they are independent domestic workers. A domestic referral agency is a type of employment agency, and they fall under the Employment Agency Act. For those of you who are interested, it's California Civil Codes 1812.500 through 5095. And basically, the particular Civil Code 5095 applies specifically to DRAs, although there are other sections of the Civil Code that also apply. But there are two types of DRAs. One is that offers housekeeping help in somebody's home. The other is non-medical home care referrals. DRAs are exempt from the licensing requirements that, and I will talk about this in a minute, that have made their way to the home care services world. So they are exempt from those licensing requirements. They provide referral services, as I mentioned, by screening and registering those domestic workers, and they refer them to clients seeking their services. So the DRAs must personally interview those caregivers and verify their work experience and the training of anybody that they refer. DRAs are paid by a referral fee. That's how they make their money. And it must be based on a percentage of the job cost. DRAs, they must disclose, and this is important, they must disclose the nature of the relationship between the domestic worker and the DRA, meaning that they are not the employee of the DRA. And in addition to that, they have to inform the client that they are ultimately, or and their wording is potentially the employer of those caregivers. So that is a big piece because that's something to be aware of. Everything I mentioned under private hire falls under this category as well. The taxes, the workman's compensation, the W-2s, all of those things still come into play when you hire through a domestic referral agency. So just something to be aware of. The DRA client and the caregiver can obviously change the schedules, and it so does offer flexibility without the DRA involvement. And really the only interest that the DRA has then is just that referral fee, that fee continues. A home care organization or a home care agency, which is also commonly known as, is a non-medical home care company that is licensed and governed under the oversight of the California Department of Social Services. A home care organization is governed by a specific set of regulations, and it's required by the Home Care Services Bureau, so I'm using a lot of terms, and I'll talk about this in a minute, it's known as AB 1217, which is the Home Care Services Protection Act. That's the name of it. It went into effect January 1st of 2016. Basically, it created the Department of Social Services Home Care Aid Registry, which means that they screen and register all of the affiliated caregivers that are affiliated with a particular agency or organization. They also do register independent home care aides, which by definition just means that they are not affiliated with a particular agency. Home care organizations can only provide home care aides that are registered and affiliated with their agency, if that makes sense. You can only, and those caregivers can be affiliated with multiple agencies, so that's important to know too. One of the big aspects of licensure is that you are required to provide a minimal amount of training and supervision to the home care aides. And home care organizations are required to carry out specific amounts of general liability insurance and to insure and bond their caregivers. So that's a huge benefit to the consumer. Home care organizations have reporting and record-keeping responsibilities to the state under the licensing regulations. And basically, all the schedules, all the issues related to the caregiver goes through the home care organization. So the home care organization is a liaison with the client and the caregiver. So one of the other pieces of this is home care organizations, as I mentioned, are the employers to the caregivers. They recruit, they hire, they train, and supervise the caregivers. They're responsible for all the payroll, the taxes, the workman's compensation, and as I mentioned, the agencies are bonded and insured. One of the aspects of that is the background check or the live scan, which is a fingerprint process that the caregiver's fingerprints are run through and against the Department of Justice, as well as the FBI, for any criminal activity or convictions. And as I mentioned before, these caregivers, the care professionals or home care aides, as they're often referred to, are registered with the Home Care Services Bureau Registry, which is all online, and you can check all of that online. So you might be wondering what caregivers are responsible for. What do they do? So home care aides, or caregivers as they're known, essentially provide assistance with all non-medical services. So ADL assistance, activities of daily living like bathing, dressing, grooming, hygiene, toileting or incontinence care, range of motion exercises, medication reminders, transfer assistance, and whether that's with assistive devices like wheelchairs or walkers. They can assist with housekeeping duties, meal preparation, all of the things you think of in terms of daily needs when you're remaining at home and need a caregiver if you can't or a loved one cannot provide them for you. And then obviously things like escorting to appointments. And so, you know, a big piece of this is the socialization, the mental support, activities, companionship, and dementia care, anything that falls under, you know, dementia care in addition to that. The focus of a home care organization or agency is really to provide consistent care. The services include an in-home care assessment by a professional care manager. Denise touched on this before, but a professional geriatric care manager has been educated in the field of human services, social worker, a nurse, psychology, gerontology. They're trained to assess, plan, coordinate all of the aspects of a senior's care. They're advocates for the older adult. They primarily function as the care manager, so they tie all the services together, and they're helping to navigate the medical system, which, as we all know, can be overwhelming. Many people have multiple doctors in different disciplines, and it's often hard to tie that information together. In addition to that, if there is a move that needs to happen, whether to a smaller place or to a different type of community, an assisted living or any different type of setting, the care manager can assist in that as well. Most home care agencies do have a certain level or aspect or of care management. Sometimes it's just a certain amount and it's included in the hourly fee. Others are fee for service, and it depends on what's needed. Others are, you know, they'll provide care management if you're using the caregivers from their agency. And then there's obviously also private care managers that you can hire, known as geriatric care managers. So part of what a home care organization would be doing with their care manager is to provide a formal individualized plan of care. And what that means is they're doing an assessment, right? So they're coming in, they're deciding with the family and the client what is needed, how much care is needed. They organize a caregiver match, which means that they arrange for caregivers based on their assessment that best fit the need of that client, both physically in terms of skill set, but also social and emotional. It can be a huge adjustment to have somebody moving into your home or coming into your home to provide care. So making a good caregiver match is, I believe, one of the major functions of a home care organization's responsibilities. Obviously, the care manager and the organization is providing consistent monitoring and oversight of both the care and the caregiver. They are providing a written individualized plan of care. Caregiver notes are reviewed and monitored by that care manager, and any information that needs to be relayed to the client and or to the family is relayed by the care manager. Care managers generally are master's level. The ones that I work with in particular are gerontologists. They provide the support, the training, and the liaison with the family and the client and the caregiver, as I mentioned before. And, you know, part of the assessment that is key is really the safety aspect of being at home. There's basic things like, is food expired? Is there enough food? Is the home too hot, too cold? Are there rugs that are trip hazards or cords across the floor? All of those basic type of safety situations in the home is something that a geriatric care manager and a home care organization would be monitoring for. They would look into and strategize with the family about care. We all know care costs money, and if you don't have long-term care insurance, it can be costly. And so one of, I think, the benefits of using either a geriatric care manager or the organization, the agency, is to help strategize about what is needed for safety. What amount of hours makes sense? Can you put other resources in place? You know, a life alert system, an adult day healthcare program during the day, and then that person just needs care overnight and supervision overnight. So there's different ways to work and to figure out how to safely keep somebody at home. You, obviously, a big piece of this is screening and monitoring for abuse and neglect. I was reading a study. It's not even necessarily updated. It was from 2015, but basically it's 1 in 10 seniors are the victim of elder abuse. That's 5 million people. That's a lot. And there's very limited funding. I believe at that time there was out of the 24 million that was asked of by Congress to help combat this fraud and neglect and abuse, only 4 million of it was approved. So, you know, there's a lot of abuse that's happening that the programs are not in place to address. So a huge benefit of having somebody monitoring the situation is to be aware of and report any concerns or issues of abuse or neglect. And then obviously also the mental functioning, reporting any health changes or depression or any major acute changes. That's, you know, one of the things that has our seniors end up in the emergency rooms often are urinary tract infections and various minor issues that can turn into major issues that if there's proper monitoring can be addressed early on. So, I just wanted to kind of define or mention the legislation because I've touched on it a little bit that has greatly impacted the world of home care because you will hear about it if you're searching for caregivers. And one of them is AB 241. It's labor protections basically for housekeepers, nannies, caregivers in private homes. It basically dictates overtime rules. So in private homes, for example, anything over 9 hours or 40 hours in a week is considered overtime. This dramatically impacted the home care agency because basically what it did was it neglected to consider the fact that many caregivers had live-in situations where they were spending the night, you know, up to 4 days at a time. And what ultimately ended up happening was many of the home care organizations that were licensed and regulated had to switch to an hourly care model, meaning paying caregivers for every hour that they were in a home, which, yes, sounds and makes sense in terms of a caregiver, but there were things that were neglected to be considered, which were things like the caregivers ended up not having the hours they needed because the situation also worked well for them. Having a live-in situation was something that was beneficial for both clients and caregivers. And so that is a piece of legislation that has impacted the industry dramatically. And there are agencies, and I will talk about this in a minute, that have different ways of addressing that regulation and law, but it is something that does impact the industry and causes us to pause a little bit in terms of how we set up a schedule if somebody needs 24 hourly care. The other big piece of legislation was AB 1217, which I touched on before, is the Home Care Services Consumer Protection Act, which again called for the licensure and regulation of home care organizations. It did all the things we mentioned, the background checks, TB clearances, set specific duties for home care organizations, all really good, positive things. And I believe was positive in the field of home care. But it does impact and dramatically increase the cost of business and everyday functioning for those agencies. So it does impact the consumer because the agencies do need to address those increased costs. So that brings me to cost, which is what many of you might be wondering about. As Denise mentioned, these costs can often be offset by long-term care insurance, but they are not covered under Medicare or private medical insurance. So it is something that is an out-of-pocket expense that can be offset by long-term care insurance. Private hires is basically all across the board, right? So it's whatever agreement you've made with that caregiver. And so those hourly rates can vary. Domestic referral agencies, basically there's a fee to the agency and often it's an ongoing fee, assuming that relationship continues. It all varies depending on the agency. And then obviously payment directly to the caregiver. And then if you are arranging for an outside company that handles payroll taxes, things like that, that would be an additional cost that falls under that. Agencies, specifically in San Francisco, range based on the services provided, the hours that are requested, but it can range pretty much between $32 and $36 an hour. Oftentimes, those fees are higher if it's less shifts, like four-hour shifts, for example. So sometimes you will see an increase in the hourly rate for less hours in a shift.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
And then care management fees may or may not be included in the cost. So it might be a fee-for-service situation from an agency or as included in the hourly rate. So that's a good question to ask when you're talking to home care organizations. Care management fees can really range anywhere between $75 to $200 an hour, often with a free consultation, maybe 30 minutes or so, and then an hour to an hour and a half assessment. Oftentimes that fee can be higher than the hourly rate for the initial assessment fee because it involves some care planning and things like that. But that's generally the ballpark range. And oftentimes those are billed similar to attorneys. So maybe 15, you know, in minutes increments, 15-minute increments, things like that. So issues and questions to ask. You want to start with, what do you need and how much can I afford? And do I have long-term care insurance? Because all of those things will come into play. Liability is something we consider in everything we do, but I do believe it's very important in this circumstance. You want to weigh all the liability between private hires, using a domestic referral agency, and or using a home care organization. There's a lot at stake. It's people's financial assets. It's their home. So it is something to really be aware of and ask questions about. If you're hiring privately, you have to consider how you're vetting that person and screening them in terms of their criminal background and all the things related to the finances that I've already talked about. Also, managing the care. How are you going to manage the care in terms of if that caregiver's sick and all of those issues related? A domestic referral agency could be more cost effective, quite honestly. It opens up multiple candidates to you. It's flexible, but you do need to ask, what are the fees? Are they one time, ongoing? What is the involvement of the DRA? Do they have resources for you in terms of payroll options and making sure that you're following all the rules and regulations and insurance considerations? You know, many people consider adding insurance to their home policy, and you'd have to talk to your insurance agent about that. But again, just considering that liability and schedule issues, as well as the possibility of hiring a private care manager to handle all the things we've already touched on. And then finally, with agencies, they sound like they're all similar, and yes, they are regulated under the same set of regulations, but many operate a little bit differently in terms of what they offer. Care management is a big piece and a question that you should definitely ask: how much care management is involved in their rate and their fee, and what are the fees if there's a fee-for-service plan? You want to find out what their philosophy is about caregiver matches, because I believe a good home care organization will really put a huge focus on that. It makes the difference between a situation working well and your loved one possibly refusing care in the future. If you have a bad experience, it can dramatically impact. So that's really, you know, the other thing is cost and how you're going to finance that. So Tara can talk about that.
Well, Catherine, thank you. This is fun to be included in this panel. Usually I'm talking about people about selling their house, not staying in their house. But I do have a close-to-home story. In the past, I acted as trustee and agent for two of my aunts. And I helped them to both stay in their homes until the end of their life. And they were so happy. And so I know how important that was to them. And I know how important it is to many people to be able to stay in their home. So today I'm here to talk about ways to stay in your home through the eyes of a real estate agent and ways to get yourself ready for your next move. If you're going into care, where you're going, things you can do while you're in your home. So five things for seniors to do if you are planning to stay in your home. Number one, and this is the most important, and thank you, Catherine, you already covered this for me. Do a health check. Do a support check. Make sure that you're healthy enough to stay at home, that you have enough support in place to stay at home, and a geriatric care manager is a great place to start. There are a lot of organizations out there to help seniors, and they can also come in and do a check with you to make sure that your home is safe and that you are safe. So that's number one. Also, check with your family and your loved ones and your support, your neighbors. Do they have the time and are they up to the task of helping you stay in your home? It is a lot of work. I know from experience, but it's very worth it. So number two, we've got number one out of the way. Do a health check. Number two is know the value of your home. Know what your current market value of your home is, less any outstanding loans you might have on it. And how do you do this? One way to do it is to hire a California licensed real estate appraiser. You could be referred to them by a real estate agent. You could be referred to them by your attorney. If you are planning on taking out a loan on your home, a home equity line, or a reverse mortgage, getting an appraiser in will be part of the process anyway. So I would say maybe skip that process of hiring an appraiser right off the bat because those are expensive. Or like $600 for a home appraisal, and you're going to have to redo it anyway if you're going to be doing a loan. Of course, my favorite way to find out the value of your home is to enlist the help of a real estate agent. I know that sounds really self-serving, but have a real estate agent and be referred to this agent by a trusted friend, a neighbor, a professional in the senior business. They all know good real estate agents that like to work with seniors. Don't rely on an online valuation for your home. There are lots of companies out there that will tell you online what your home is worth. Well, how could they do that? I don't know in San Francisco how they could possibly tell you. You really need a human, an appraiser you need, or an agent. So you're thinking, oh, God, I really don't want a real estate agent to come into my house and I don't want to deal with this. Work through referral. Find the right match, the right agent to come in and work with you. Hopefully somebody that is well-versed in working with seniors and knows that your goal is to stay in your home for as long as you can. You just want to know what is it worth. Another reason I like for seniors to work with an agent rather than appraiser or is to find a trusted resource. Find an agent that could be a resource to help you with when things go wrong in your home. Who is a good plumber? What company can I call to do a sewer replacement? I know there's so many scammers out there. Who could come and cut the tree up in parts and haul it out because it blew over in the windstorm? And who's going to fix my fence? If you have a real estate agent that you are familiar with and that has done a market analysis for you and is looking to build a relationship with you, their Rolodex is golden for you. Their referrals are golden for you. And they also are kind of a gatekeeper to who comes into your home. They're not going to send you a referral of somebody they don't know. Hopefully not, you know. They want to build a relationship with you, so they're going to send you good people. I think that is good for your safety as well. A real estate agent will also keep you updated on what your market value is of your home. So you need to know this value. If you need to dip into your home, either through a home equity line of credit or a reverse mortgage. We all know what our stock portfolios are worth, but we don't always know what our home is worth. You get lots of glossy postcards that go bloop, right into the circular file every day, what your neighbor's house sold for or around the block. And that's great. You might have some idea of what your home is worth, but there's nothing like having someone in the front door to really see it. Those houses have been staged. They've been shined. They've been polished. They've been remodeled. But we want to know what your house is worth. So that's number two. Sorry, it's a long one, but know the value of your home and establish a relationship with an agent if you can. Number three on my list, and I love this one. Everybody should do it all the time, even if you're not thinking of selling your house. But have a home inspection. Know for the safety of your home, for the future of you, the time you're going to be staying in your home, how healthy is your home? What is going on with it? There are two big inspections I like to recommend to folks to have, and one is a general contractor's home inspection, and that covers systems of the home, the roof, the foundation, the electrical, the plumbing, the heating. And those are the basic systems of your home. They will see, tell you how are they functioning, how much more life is left in them. You want to know before you're planning to stay in your home if you have a roof repair and a sewer repair and what else is expensive? Well, it's all expensive. You want to know what is going on with your home before you sign on to staying there a little bit longer. Another inspection that we don't think about very often, but there's an inspection called a structural pest inspection. And this is not necessarily for pests like mice and rats and ants. It's an inspection for termites and, more importantly here in San Francisco, dry rot. Dry rot is deadly in our houses. Our stucco houses, if they get cracked, they have water intrusion, the water gets into the wood rots. Hey, your steps, your front steps, the way people get in and out of your home, they're compromised. You need to know that. A stair replacement can be $25,000. The back stairs on the back of your house that are all wooden, that could be $20,000. So we want to know first if your house is sound and what's it going to cost to stay there. Hopefully you get good news on these reports. And also one thing that I want to stress on the structural pest report and the contractor's report is that they can tell you if there's water intrusion in your home and possibly would lead to mold. There is also an inspection just for mold. I think for everybody that has any kind of respiratory compromise, they need to know if there's mold around, and these two inspections can help you pinpoint it and take care of it, and that will keep you healthy and safe. These inspections can be about $1,200 if you have a mold inspection. Maybe that's $300 or $400 more, but I think it's money well spent to help you make that financial decision: do I stay or do I go? If you're thinking of selling your home in a couple years anyway, these inspections are good for 2 or 3 years. And it also helps when you go to sell the home to have had these inspections and mark what has been taken care of. And also, importantly, what hasn't. Then you are able to tell your buyer, this is an as-is sale. I want to tell you the roof is going to go pretty soon. It's about 2 years left in its life. Or I've patched the roof and it's ready to go tomorrow. And you make your sale as is, so it makes a cleaner sale for you, and hopefully the sale is, you can get a higher price for your house, knowing that you've taken care of some of these things. Your home inspector should be able to steer you in the direction of what repairs need to be done and what repairs can wait. For example, if you have one of these gigantic gravity furnaces that came in homes in 1920 and 30, and they were just gigantic, but they still work. They never quit. They're like old gas stoves. And I've had inspectors tell my senior clients, don't touch that. Don't touch that. When you pull that furnace out, you got to pull out the asbestos ducting. There's that thing. It's working. You're going to save $12 a month on your heating bill, but this is a $25,000, $20,000 job. Don't do it. Happy people. So knowing that, that saved that that client a lot of money. And the next folks that buy the house can take out the gravity furnace if they want. But you know what? They never do. They still keep it in there. That's why they're still around. That's number three. Have a home inspection. Number four, my favorite topic. If you're going to be staying at home, I'm going to put you to work. I want you to declutter and downsize your home. I think for the safety, your mental health, and your safety of your body, we need to be working on this. One of my favorite gifts to my clients is this little book here called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And many of you have read it already. I've read it a couple times, and I think she sold... Last time I bought a copy, she had sold 3 million copies, and now she sold 6 million copies of this book. There's something about it. No, this book is not going to clean out your closets. You have to do that. But it is very inspirational, and I love it for $16.99. You can read it in about 2 days, and it's a lot of fun, and it will light a fire under you. But like I said, it's not going to do the work. The title is called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up.
She has a new one after that.
She does. I'm afraid to read it because I haven't done everything she says in here. But Marie Kondo is fantastic. The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. And I think Marie Kondo. I'm going to have this at the end so we can go over this. But I think... Money well spent. I keep spending your money here, but having a professional organizer come to your home and sit with you and help you organize. If you're going to have a caregiver come into your home, you got to clean out that spare bedroom. You got to clean out that closet. You got to clean out the drawers. If you are going to stay home and you have a walker, you need help ridding yourself of extra bookcases and coffee tables and end tables and tables. And you need help. A professional organizer will come and do that. And they can be referred to you by a lot of professional people, real estate person included. It does make your home safe, and it just helps you to get that process going. You are still in your home. You are still in charge of your stuff. So while you're still there and in charge of it, get it organized. And this little book has a lot of cute chapters on, you know, your tchotchkes, your crystal, your everything, and we'll help you make decisions. The professional organizers, they're just real whip crackers, and they'll help you make decisions too. We're having I'm having a seminar on this topic in October. I'm happy to invite you all. That's number four. Number five, get your home title, the title of your home, and other documents, important documents, in order. I think when you do this and you're working with your professional organizer, if you didn't know where your manila folder of important documents was before, you will, after you work with an organizer. All of your stuff will be in one place. Do yourself a favor. Write yourself a note where that stuff is and tell your trustee, tell your next of kin, tell somebody else where that folder is located. One thing about looking at the trust of your property, an agent can order that report for you. A title company can order that report for you. You can go down to City Hall and look at it, but that's not so much fun. It's very easy to get one ordered. Sit down with your agent, sit down with your accountant, and look at that title report and see whose name is on title to that property. How is it held? Have you done your trust yet? Is that property properly put into your trust? And that will help you later. Maybe you don't feel so good when it's time to sell your house, and we need to know about that title. It'll also show loans that have been on your property, if they haven't been recorded as being paid off. I can't tell you how many times I get to a senior title report and there's some darn loan from their employer or their credit union that's 30 years old and they paid it off 30 years ago. Guess what? They had the paperwork in their manila folder. So there it was, and the title company was able to clear it and go forward. You can see if there's any funny little liens on your property, garbage liens or anything like that. And while I'm on that topic, I'm not an attorney, so I can't really counsel you or give you legal advice. But I want to say from a real estate agent's perspective that it's a really easy transaction for seniors when their property is in a trust and the successor trustee is named and there's people in that senior's life to help with that transaction. It's not a hassle to include children or, like in my case, nieces and stuff, in the sale. It's not a hassle for them to sign paperwork and to be involved in the process. We live in an electronic world, and it's nothing more than sending them an email and having them put digital signatures next to your signatures. And it's not hard for you to sign digitally either if you like to do that kind of thing. So if your trust is in order and your trustees are on board and your home title is in order, it makes your sale really safe, and it also keeps you safe from fraud later or somebody claiming title. I'll tell a funny story. I had a sale one time. It was probate sales. They did not have a trust, and the woman died, and the state went to great efforts to locate her cousin, her first cousin, who hired me to clean the house out and get it sold. And there was a question from the neighbors who had come up with a letter that said that the house was to be given to them, that it was a last will and testament from the deceased whose house I was selling. And but these neighbors hadn't checked on her in forever and didn't do anything, but they somehow had a letter. Well, they got handwriting analysis and everything, and it was proven that it was totally a bogus letter. Had that woman had her property in trust, or had her manila folder with her cousin's contact, or had her cousin on title with her, anything, it would have been a lot easier. As it was, we sorted it out, but it was a close call, someone saying that they wanted this Noe Valley house that was about $1.4 million at the time, probably $2 million now. But anyway, money well spent. Again, I know I'm spending your money on professional organizers and home inspections and having a trust drawn up, but I think it's all really good for you. So that's all I have for seniors staying safe through real estate.
Okay, thank you. We'd like to remind our listening audiences, this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to our panel discussion, How to Age in Place Safely. Our thanks to our panelists for their comments here today. I'm Denise Michaud of the Club's Grown Ups Forum, and I'll be moderating today's audience question period. Panelists, I'm sure we have a large number of questions, so let's begin. And we have Susan back there with the microphone. Any questions that we have? We have a question up here, Susan.
Oh, okay. So how much does it cost to have long-term care insurance?
Oh, the insurance.
Yeah, the actual insurance.
Okay, so the insurance is the premium for the insurance, or the cost of the insurance, is based on your health history, right, and your age, mm-hmm, and the amount of coverage that you have. So there's a range.
Right.
And so it can range from, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month to could be $1,000 a month. You know, that's what the range is that I've seen.
Okay. So the earlier, I'm turning 60 this, mm-hmm, year. So I think I've been told that I should be better for me to get it before I turn.
When you're 59.
Yeah, when,
right?
I'm 59. But I don't want to be spending $500 a month for the next 30 years.
Right. So you can do a quick calculation because the younger you buy it, you're actually going to pay less over time than if you even wait 1 year and pay. So if you pay it for, let's say, 25 years, mm-hmm. you'll be paying less for 25 years than you will for 26 years if you wait one more year or 24
right.
years. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's always, insurance is always, you know, less expensive now and over time if you buy it younger.
Right. And then you said that there's a way to do it where if you don't need it or if you die young, that the money goes back to the estate.
Right, right. There are some programs out there, mm-hmm. and that's another option to look at. And again, depending on your health and your age and your financial resources, we look at what is appropriate for your situation.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Along those lines, we have had that type of insurance for about 25 years, mm-hmm. so we have it quite reasonably. Mm-hmm. But there are two spinoffs from that, actually, that we talk about. You can't hear me? Oh, now?
Yeah.
Okay. There are two spinoffs from that. One is, because we bought it so long ago at quite a low rate, mm-hmm. What it would kick in and pay now is also going to be a low rate, comparatively speaking, mm-hmm. to what things cost then. Secondly, my husband figures, had he put the money in the stock market, we would have a great deal more than we do through that insurance policy.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that your policy doesn't have an inflation factor, right?
And they keep on raising the price on it.
Oh.
They keep on raising the price every year. I started at $1,000. I think I get $300 a month. Now it's about $3,000 a month.
Right, but your benefit doesn't go up.
The benefit doesn't go up.
So part of planning is to plan for what is appropriate then when you bought it and also in the future.
Well, this was the early stage of the long-term care.
Yes.
Our agent didn't know too much. We
right.
had a,
right. And so another part of that is to evaluate your plan periodically, you know, every few years.
Well, they can change the... Change the rules. I mean, I think I only get $300 a month, and what I hear, that's not $300 a day.
$300.
And that's not going to take care of anything these
no.
days.
Well, $300 a day will cover a portion of it, of your care.
A small portion.
And so the planning that you need to do now is to, so you have that piece done, the cost of care is X, we have to determine how are you going to handle the other part
yeah.
of your care at home or in a facility, and then look at your financial situation and your picture and make a plan according to that
yeah.
now and for the future.
So now, what about long-term care? I mean, reverse mortgages, you're going to talk about that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not a mortgage broker, but the mortgage broker I work with and I have gone over this a couple times. Reverse mortgages are expensive, but... it is a way to get cash flow from the property that you already own. Pretty much people have their homes paid off. Reverse mortgages in San Francisco, you can borrow usually up to 50% of your home's value, which is significant now. The upfront costs are somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000, which can be put into the mortgage. You can borrow against that. Interest rates are quite low right now on regular loans, and the reverse mortgage interest that's added to, on top of regular interest is about, there's a 1%, 1.25% for private mortgage for that mortgage. There's about 2%, 2.5% added because it's a reverse mortgage. So all together right now, 6% for the interest on the reverse mortgage. They also usually come with a cap, a lifetime cap. It can't go beyond the one I was looking at today was it couldn't go beyond 13.5%. So it's a floating rate, and it's expensive, but if that is your biggest asset and you need to borrow against it, you also can't be, you need to be 62 years old. You can't do it yet. And if you are out of your home for more than 6 months, you need to work towards paying that mortgage off. So if you have gone out of your home into a convalescent care, you've got about 6 months to convalesce and get back, or you need to start working on ways to pay that loan off, which is usually you're selling your home and moving out of it. So does that answer where we're at? Okay.
I had a question. You were saying that once you get a policy in place to use it, you know, as soon as you can. But isn't there a lifetime maximum?
When you qualify, right?
Well, once you qualify.
Is there a lifetime maximum?
Yeah.
Yes. There's one company that has lifetime coverage.
Right.
There's only one coverage left. I mean, one policy left that does lifetime. But yes, usually there is a lifetime maximum that you have. The longest is a 10-year period.
10 years.
So it lasts 10 years or longer if you didn't use your benefit every day or month.
So each policy is only for 10 – wait, what's for 10 years?
If you can purchase a policy that would pay your benefits once you need care for 10 years. If you use the money every single day or month, it would last 10 years. But if you don't use it all, it would last longer.
I see.
So you do have this lifetime.
So you don't necessarily want to use it right away. Don't you want to wait till you're much sicker?
So that's the problem I had with a lot of my clients, the older people who want to hold on to their policy in case something really bad happens. You know, they need care now. Though the thing is that with most of the policies, you don't have to pay your premium when you start using your benefits. Even if you had one service a month, you don't pay your premium. So I would have it kick in.
Right.
And that's, again, part of managing the money.
I got it. You know? Okay. Thank you.
Can the organization go bankrupt?
Can the insurance companies go bankrupt?
And not being able to pay what they promised to?
We have one company. There's one company that has gone bankrupt. But that company was a triple B company, meaning a very low-rated company from the very beginning. And so it was a high-risk company. And unfortunately, Consumer Reports in 1997, I think something like that, said it was the best company. Mm. And we all said, "What? How can they do that?" But anyway, I have one client with that company. He was high risk; nobody wanted him to insure him, but they did. So he was high risk; they're high risk. So we, had that conversation. So that's a risk. Most companies, the companies that you want to be with are, you want them to be a AAA company, a AA company. You want them to be very strong over the 100 years or 150 years they've been in business. And then it would be less risk for anything, negative to happen with that kind of company.
Is Nationwide a AAA?
I don't use Nationwide. I don't think they sell long-term care insurance. They might have before. But I'd have to Google them to see, what their financial ratings are.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Denise, you mentioned that one long-term care insurance company still provides lifetime coverage. Mm-hmm. What is the name of that company?
It's State Life.
State Life. And what is their AMS rating?
I think they're a double A.
Double A. Double A.
But if you want to give me a call, I can give you more information or direct you on how to find out more.
Thank you.
I'm still looking for the book.
At the end.
No, that's what I'm.
Okay, I'll see you at the end. You're going to leave? Oh, here.
Susan, could you pass this to me just so she could see the title? Thank you. Thanks.
Can you use?
Susan, we want you to have a microphone.
Okay, here. Can you use your long-term care insurance for a private person, not go through an agency? Or do some of them require that you have to use a licensed agency?
Some of the old policies do require that you have to go through an agency. And in many states, you have to go through an agency or have a licensed caregiver, licensed or certified caregiver. In California, we don't need to have the personal caregiver be licensed or through an agency. I always like to recommend going through an agency, but I have a couple of clients who hired the friend of their granddaughter, you know, who is studying nursing. So that seems to be working out fine. But the policy's wording is that they can hire skilled or unskilled care. And the key is that the doctor, we ran into a snag, you know, just the other month there with this one question. The doctor has to agree that the person can have an independent caregiver, not from an agency. So the doctor has to agree to that.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And the money back thing, the money back, you get money back if you don't use it? What policies do that?
There are some policies out there. They were developed in 1987. They've been around for a long time. And it combines life insurance with long-term care benefits. You don't buy it for the life insurance, so to speak, but it's life insurance. There is annuity and long-term care, too. And that you can get your money back as well. But basically, you put in some money, it leverages, it creates more money to be used for long-term care. And if you don't need long-term care first and die, then the death benefit comes back to your estate or your beneficiary.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For those policies, long-term care policies that cover a care manager, mm-hmm. does the insurance company usually state who has to be used?
This is going to vary from company to company. Most companies will say that they will provide a local independent care manager, and what they do is they go to a national care management organization. And they pay them, and that national organization will find a local person. So the local person is truly independent from the insurance company. And if you don't like that care manager, then you can request another one, typically. Some policies will give you a lump sum of money to use to hire a care manager.
Okay.
Susan, right back.
And sorry, repeating again this issue that she brought up, which is very interesting. Is there actually a conflict of interest if the manager is basically being paid by the insurance, so it can be manipulating?
Yeah, they try to take that out of the picture by using a national care management organization that is not connected with the insurance company.
So who is in charge?
The local independent care manager.
No, what I mean, so let's say I'm hiring, I'm in charge, right?
I'm
in charge of keeping her or not keeping her.
Oh, you mean
hiring
the policyholder?
Yeah, right.
Oh, the policyholder, yes. Basically, you definitely have some rights there. If you have I haven't had anyone had any problems with the care managers, but if the person did not like the care manager or there was conflict, they didn't agree with what the care manager said, they can ask to have another care manager come and do the assessment and the plan of care.
Thank you.
Hi. There are lots of information that I have provided there, and we thank you very much for that. You know, from social worker, from insurance, real estate. I have a question probably unique from the group. I'm a retired military officer. I'm just wondering if you have a unique program for military retiree.
Thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, as far as the insurance goes, as far as I know, there's nothing that's unique for insurance for military. there is VA benefits, right. but you have to qualify in terms right. of it's means tested. So income and assets take into consideration whether you'd get benefits from the VA.
So in terms of caregiving or home care agencies through the VA, there often is specific programs that either utilize certain agencies or have some money or resources for both the veteran and or the spouse, assuming they meet the certain requirements for service. Okay. So it would be all through the VA first in terms of questions and qualifications, and then from there you could definitely qualify for certain benefits.
Okay. How about Social Security or social worker?
Again, that would all be through the VA in terms of the specific programs and the money allocated. Generally, like if you used a home care agency and that was funded through the VA, that piece of care management or social worker would generally, like with our agency, for example, is part of the package. It's part of the hourly rate, so it would be included. So as if you qualified and the VA referred you to certain agencies, that would be one of the questions I ask them is, of those particular organizations, do you have care management available to me and how much of it? Does that make sense?
Yes. I'm familiar with all this VA, all the benefits that you just mentioned, COVID and what have you. You know, I enlisted in the Air Force here in San Francisco back in 1956. I'm back here again. And I thought maybe there must be something unique here in San Francisco, you know, because we have the Presidio. We have a military group down here. I thought maybe there must be something unique here that will benefit me.
Not from the
That I'm aware of, in terms of...
But the best thing, I think, for people who are eligible for VA benefits is to visit the VA administration. I think every county has one, and sit, make an appointment and sit down and really go over what you're eligible for, what's available, and what's not available.
Okay. I'm familiar with those. I'm just wondering about your group, whether you have some special...
I wish I did. I wish I did.
I wish we did.
Thank you.
Do you have another question? Susan, right here.
One other way around this, we have are fortunate enough to, two of our sons are doing extremely well, and one of them is a realtor. And in comparing the interest we would pay on a reverse mortgage as compared to
home equity line,
the home equity, you know, no, not the home equity. Our two sons loaning us, setting up what they think what that would cost at a much lower rate, and then that's just we have four kids. Mm-hmm. So, but the two who would be giving us more, then that would just their part would be.
It's their job.
You know, well, no,
help them.
But then when the house goes, you know, and you being the realtor would know, we paid the asking price of $35,000 for our house.
No.
That was 54 years ago. Wow. Across the street recently sold for $5 million and something. So he's paralyzed about selling the house because we would have to give this huge amount to the government.
Right, right.
And we're determined to keep it for the kids. So, but the, if you're fortunate enough to have that situation, the private loan arrangement costs.
That's a great option.
A great option. You know, I talked earlier that I had two aunts that I helped stay in their homes. My first aunt, we did do a reverse mortgage. So I saw the whole workings of it, and it did work very well for her. She was able to repair her house. She was able to buy what she wanted without, you know, really worrying about everything, and lived in her home very comfortably for about 3 or 4 years when she had that reverse mortgage. Now, my second aunt, I was in a different situation with her, and we were able to arrange through a small bank that I bank with in San Francisco, a home equity line of credit for her home. Now, she was 86 years old at the time and didn't have a job, so she wasn't going to get the loan, but I co-signed with her for the loan. So we were able to get a great rate. If you have children or some nieces and nephews that will co-sign for a home equity line and they own their own home and they have a good job, that's a great way to go.
Yeah, very
smart. They are, but you know, I was on title with her. It has to be a very trusted person. I was also on title with her,
and in the loan. So, but that's a great option if you don't want to do the reverse mortgage.
So unfortunately, we've come to the end of our program. And our thanks to our distinguished panelists for their comments here today. We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 114th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.